Chav Sang Shvat, 7th of February, Dr. Baruch Brooks, Spiritual Genetics.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, before I actually begin the talk, I think there are two pieces of introduction to Hagdomas that I need to say. Firstly, we understand that Kodesh Baruch Hu not only created the world, but he runs the world every moment and moment, and everything that he does, everything that happens in the world, is as a result of his actions. However, he does, kaviyochel, allow the world to run according to order. And we call that order nature, or we call it science, or whatever. It's only when there's some sort of hara or shah that a Kodesh Baruch Hu needs to intervene, and we have a nes nigla. But that nes nigla happens, like Kriyas Yam Suf, once, and it doesn't happen again. As opposed to the normal nature, as we call it, which still works according to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's commands every moment and moment, but he allows it to continue for all time and pass on to generation and generation. The other note is that we should understand that 800 years ago, the Ran, in his Roshas, warned us about being careful in trying to explain Torah according to science. Science, he proclaimed, correctly, is not an exact discipline. Theories come and go. Ideas are refuted. Only the truth of Torah is immutable. But since we, in his words, are a doit chosrei emuna, we sometimes need chizuk in seeing how some of the things that Chazal foretold are happening now, and we call that scientific discoveries. So, let me start with something that happened to me maybe about 30 years ago. I first read Reb Dessler's essay on Schus Ovois, and I was quite amazed, because he said there the Schus Ovois was not like a bank account, that the good works, that all the effort that the Ovois did in creating the midos that they made, created for us some sort of bank account that we could draw on in the time of need, that we need that Schus. He said, no, Schus Ovois was the fact that we had inherited the midos of Avram Avinu and Yitzchok and Yaakov, and they are part of us. I mean, he cited the fact that Jews, even Jews far from Torah and mitzvahs, are well known for their philanthropic works. And he said the midah of chesed is something that is built into us as Yidden. When I read that, I was amazed. I said, well, Reb Dessler is speaking about something called spiritual genetics. And at the time, 30 years ago, that seemed a very nice mushadrosha, but how could that relate to reality? I mean, we know that people, the Nefesh HaChaim and Tanya, speak about the relationship between the Nefesh and the Guf, but how are we to understand that in concepts that are known to us today? Now, many, many years even before that, I became inspired by the discovery of DNA, and later on, in my school days, the elucidation of what was called the genetic code. The discovery of how things work, how the genetics, how we pass on our traits from generation to generation. So I have to pause and give you a little bit of a lecture on what's called molecular genetics. Every cell in the human body, except for eggs and sperm, contain 23 pairs of chromosome. One set of 23 from the mother, and one set of 23 from the father. Now these chromosomes, in the nucleus of every cell, are very fine thread-like structures, containing within them individual units, which are called genes. And those genes contain the information to build the structure and the function of every human being. Every animal, everything, every living thing. In 60 years ago, they discovered that the active part of these chromosomes was DNA. And DNA exists, if you can imagine, a long thread of beads with four different colours of the beads. And imagine two threads of these beads twisted around each other. Then you have this chain of DNA. If we look at the whole genome, the whole structure of DNA, there, these little beads, which are called bases, nucleotide bases, there are something like 3 billion of them in a human genome. And they found out in the 60s that if you took three of them together, triplets of these three beads, of three bases, each triplet, each one is like a Morse code. Each one of them codes for the production of a building block of proteins, and those proteins will become our bodies and the enzymes that make us function. So what's that all got to do with Avraham Avinu? Well, we know, and we've known for many years, that unfortunately there are genetic illnesses, things like Tay-Sachs and cystic fibrosis. And when that genetic code was elucidated, they came to understand that these genetic diseases come about because of a mutation, a change in one of these series of beads, of these nucleotide bases. And that means that there's a misread of the program, and so instead of producing a correct protein, you produce an incorrect protein, and that's what gives result of to an illness. Sometimes, in the case, for example, of cystic fibrosis, there's just one of these beads is missing from the whole chain of these 3 billion beads. Just one is missing, and that's enough to make an individual who has cystic fibrosis. So we can see that it's possible, by changing the code, to change an individual. And so the scientists, in their way, in 1990, began a project called the Human Genome Project, in which they wanted to elucidate all these 3 billion bases in order to understand exactly how a human works. That's as they thought. They spoke for Sva'echod, like the Dora Floga, and just like the Dora Floga, the results that they came out were not quite as they imagined, because when you think of the number of possible combinations of 3 billion of these bases, they imagined that they would come up with hundreds of thousands of different genes which go towards making a human being. Well, lo and behold, they only found something like 25,000. If you think that a worm has 17,000 of these genes, and a human being has 25,000. So there's so much between a worm and a human being that just cannot be explained by just these few other genes. So something was missing. They didn't know what was happening. To add to all of this, when they elucidated all this chain and put it into the units of the genes, they found that only about 2 or 3% of this whole 3 billion chains was actually encoding for proteins. The rest was doing nothing at all. Well, think about it. Would the Ribono Shel Olam create a world in which 97% was redundant? It just can't be. It couldn't be like that. And even the scientists themselves understood that they didn't know what was going on. However, the fact is that if a change occurs in the genetic code in the 3% that's really active, then a change will cause a disease like cystic fibrosis or Tay-Sachs, and unfortunately these people will be very ill and quite probably will not reproduce, and therefore those people will be lost. Those mutations are devastating. But what happens if a mutation occurs in one of this 97%? It means that the mutation occurs, but it doesn't do any harm, because it is occurring in the part of the DNA which is silent. Therefore, such a mutation could be passed on from generation to generation. And that's how we can track. I mean, if anybody's been following the Richard III story in the news, you'll find out that they tracked out from 17 generations on from him. They found out somebody who was related to him, and they could identify his bones as being those of Richard III. Why? Because, again, these mutations that occur within a family are passed on from generation to generation, so we can track them. And we use those, when I set up the genetics program in Shared Tzedek, to track genetic diseases, to help couples be able to have children who are free of these diseases, we needed a way of finding an absolute fingerprint so that we could be sure that our results were 100% correct. And we had a major problem in doing this, because almost all of our patients were Jewish, obviously not related to each other, But when we came to check these mutations, we found that, lo and behold, many of them had very, very similar mutations as if they were part of the same family. And the answer is, of course, they are part of the same family. Would you believe that this is showing us that we actually have some of the DNA of Avraham Avinu inside us? The very genes, the very DNA that Avraham Avinu had, these mutations, these tiny mutations have been passed down all the way through from generation to generation, and that's a part of us today. So could it be that some of these so-called silent markers that have come through to us are actually things which are important to us as Yidden and part of the source of voice that we have inherited from them? Well, wait a moment. I'll come to that in a second. And if you think that the idea of that is a little bit sort of exaggerated, they did a study. You're looking at the Y chromosome. The Y chromosome only is in the male line. Women have two X chromosomes, and men have one X and one Y chromosome. So by looking at the Y chromosomes and these particular markers on them, they were able to follow male descendants. And they looked at hundreds and hundreds, in fact thousands, of Kohanim. And they found that Kohanim, whether they were Sephardim or whether they were Ashkenazim, had a much, much greater incidence of certain particular markers than the rest of the population. And when the scientists who carried out this study, they know exactly what the chances are of a mutation occurring, they calculated that the results were so extreme that it would have to have been that all these people were descendants of one person who lived about 3,000 years ago. So it's not an exaggeration that, you know, that we are inherited the traits. But as somebody asked the question, Avraham Avinu had two sons. He had Yitzchak, but he also had Yishmael. So why didn't Yishmael inherit the good things that Avraham Avinu had? And Yitzchak had Esav. Why didn't Esav inherit those things? Well, for there you actually have to look inside. I think it's the Or HaChaim brings down that Inochinami, Yishmael did inherit the chesed that Avraham Avinu had. But it was unbridled chesed. It was chesed without yiroh. And chesed without yiroh leads to the permissive society. Everything is fine. Everything is permissible. Why not? What's yours is mine. I'll take it. He became a galuf. He wanted something. What's yours is mine. I'll take it. He did have the midah of chesed, but it was chesed without yiroh. And so too by Esav. Esav also had the midah of yiroh that he inherited from his father Yitzchak. But his midah of yiroh wasn't the Yiras Shemayim, it was Yiras Adam. He was frightened that everybody was out to get him, so he killed everybody that came up against him. It was a misuse of the Midah. That's telling us that inheriting the Midah doesn't automatically mean that it's translated to action. You still have to work on that Midah. It's creating a potential to do Chesed. It's creating a potential of Yiroh, which seems to be passed down from generation to generation. But nonetheless, we still have to work on that.
Would that change his genetic structure?
Well, it's okay. So that's the next question. How could that be then passed down from generation to generation? How would that work? Well, scientists are beginning to show two things. Firstly, that this 97% of the DNA isn't so silent. For example, I quoted cystic fibrosis, it's shown that people who are even carriers of cystic fibrosis, they carry one chromosome but not the other, if they have a certain combination of these markers, nonetheless they will still have disabilities and make them infertile. There are genes which control early menopause in women, and the extent of which this gene will be effective seems to be controlled by the number of the particular markers that they have. In order to do transplants, we have to make a donor. We have to make sure that a person is a donor. How do we do that? By making sure they have to have specific markers in something called the leukocyte gene to show that their organ could be used as a transplant for somebody else. So scientists are finding that part of this so-called silent DNA is doing something. It's modifying the genome that we have. These 25,000 genes that we have are not enough to explain how we are and how we're built and what we do. There's obviously some way in which these are being controlled. We all know what a mouse looks like. It's meant to be grey in colour and slim. Well, it is that way because it has a gene in its makeup called the agouti gene, which, although it's there, normally doesn't function. Because the gene is not turned on. It's not functioning. If we take a pregnant mouse and we feed her with a diet which is deficient in the things that it needs to turn off this gene, then she gives birth to a mouse which is very large, yellow or golden in colour, much more likely to develop diabetes, and much more likely to develop cancer. And the most remarkable thing is that these yellow mice, fat mice, give birth to also yellow fat mice. Meaning that an environmental change by changing the diet of the mother will affect not only her children, but her generations. So something in the environment has actually created a genetic signal which is carried on generation to generation. So if you think that's something sort of a chidush, what did Yaakov do with the sheep of Lavan? He took the white sheep of Lavan, he took a stick, and he made stripes in it, did all sorts of things, and these white sheep gave birth to spotted sheep. So he created, in some way, an environmental change that produced spotted sheep. But then he put the sheep, ba'eda levad, so all the spotted sheep were together. And the spotted sheep carried on giving birth to spotted sheep. Meaning that he created something in the environment which had become genetic and was then passed on quite naturally without using the stick. Quite naturally, these spotted sheep carried on giving spotted sheep. So we see that such things are, you know, have been going on, and we realize, and the scientists have realized, that this wonderful edifice called the human genome isn't enough to explain what's going on. We do seem to be able to change the way in which we transfer characteristics to our children. Now, the Gemara is full of instances of women who went to the Beis Medrash when they were pregnant, so that the Uba would hear Divrei Torah, the story of Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan, and their mothers, that they one ate on Yom Kippur, one didn't eat on Yom Kippur, so therefore the middos of Reish Lakish were different to the middos of Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara tells us in many places that a woman who's pregnant or nursing should eat certain types of food and not other types of food. These are not things which are nice things to do. We're seeing that it has actually a genetic effect on the children. There was a study done many years ago in Holland. In Holland, they like most Scandinavian countries, they have birth records going back hundreds of years, tens of years, decades and decades of all the characteristics of children born in particular years. And they were able to show from this that children born, especially girls who were born in the years of famine that they were, those girls, when they grew up, were much more likely to have fertility issues and have problems with hormonal issues, which is showing that their mothers who were, when they were pregnant with them during that year of famine, they had a poor diet, and their diet affected their children, and that will be passed on to their children and their children's children. So, you know, we like to think that, you know, the things that we do and the way that we behave don't necessarily affect our offspring. We might think that they might actually affect our children because they live in the same environment as we do, but it's not going to affect our grandchildren. Our children will grow up and they'll go their own separate ways and they'll do what they want to do. That's not quite the case. It's possible, and scientists are beginning to think about this today, that the way that we act, the things that we do, the food that we eat, the environment in which we live, with toxic compounds and toxic compounds invading the air, and in terms of things like internet and cyberspace and whatever, these things might very well be affecting not just us, but affecting the children that we produce. The control of the genes is something which is called epigenetics. Epigenetics means above genetics, because we see that it's not just the genetic material that we have that controls who we are, but the way in which this genetic material is expressed. And the way that this genetic material is expressed is controlled by factors which, firstly, are in the environment, but those things become fixed within our genome, control our genes, and are then passed on from generation to generation. If you take identical twins, when they are born, they've lived in the same environment for the last 9 months. When they are born, and the studies are done on this, the level of what's called epigenetic control that they have on their genome is exactly the same. Their genetic composition is exactly the same. They were two eggs that split up and they became identical twins. So their level of control of their genome is exactly the same. If we look at these identical twins as they grow older, we see that the level of epigenetic control in their genes changes from the individuals. And you will find once they get into 60s and 70s, they're very, very different. Why? Because they've led different lives. They've had different illnesses. They've been exposed to a different environment. They've behaved in different ways. Therefore, although they started out exactly the same, they've changed over their lifetime. And those changes are reflected in the way that their genes operate. And that will be passed on to their children. For us, that's telling us that we can do tshuva. We can change the way that we are by changing the things, the way that we react. Unfortunately, things don't always work only the tav. Sometimes they work lebish. In the last elections in Eretz Yisrael, there were 32 political parties contesting 120 seats. Why is that? Well, you know, we seem to have inherited some of the characteristics of Korach too. You know, those things are in all of us, but we do have the ability to change them. The genes that we have are not a final answer to who we are. Certainly our environment plays an important part of that. The chemical environment in terms of the food that we eat, the environment in which we breathe our air. But also, and this is becoming more discussed amongst scientists today, that the way in which we behave, the things that we do, can affect us. It was known that after 9/11, there were 200 women who were actually, they were saved from 9/11, saved from the buildings, who were pregnant at the time. And as you can imagine, most of these women suffered post-trauma stress syndrome. And part of that involves a change in their hormone levels, a drop in cortisol levels in their blood, and that makes them much more susceptible to stress. Well, they followed these women up, they gave birth, and they followed up the children, and they found out that a large number of the children also had low levels of cortisol, meaning that the children had inherited in utero the stress syndrome of their mother. Obviously, they're going to follow up these children to see whether their children will do the same thing. But certainly, they are speaking now in terms of Holocaust survivors. It's certainly known that children of Holocaust survivors were known to have far greater problems of stress and anxiety and depression. And it was always assumed that that was because these children grew up in the home of Holocaust survivors. And because the Holocaust survivors themselves had issues, these became part of the life of the children. But they're now actually questioning that. They're actually wondering whether the symptoms that the children display are a genetic result of the trauma and the stress that the parents went through during the Shoah. And if that's true, that should be passed on even to the third generation. And those are the studies that are going on at the moment, because we have traumatic events like that that seem to be causing continuation of the characteristics into their children and their children's children. Now, one of the greatest medical geneticists in this country, Professor Pembury, considered all of these issues, and he said in a recent TV program, and I'll quote, "You have to live your life as a guardian of your genome for your children and grandchildren." Now, if one of the leaders of medical genetics in this country can say such a thing, I think that's showing the concern that scientists have that the way in which we live, both in terms of the environment in which we create ourselves and the food we eat, and the way in which we behave, can affect our children and our children's children. The greatest heritage that we can give to our children, our grandchildren, and all the those that come up after us, is to try to make sure that we defend those characteristics that we've inherited from the Avos, from Avraham Avinu, the midah of Chesed, from Yitzchok, the midah of Yiro, and from Yaakov, the midah of Tiferes, a combination of those other two midahs, that we should use those that creates in us in the potential to emulate them, to be like them, to pass that on to our children so that they will be able to stand up to the stresses and strains that the environment is bringing to them, the physical strains that they have, the spiritual strains that they have. In a world that is becoming increasingly hefker, it's important that we Yidden retain our genetic consistency, and we can do that. We can improve things. Tshuva will also help to improve the genetic control that we have, so that Be'ezus Hashem will perfect ourselves and we'll be ready for the Geul Shleim Amen.